At the UPMC Rudy facility on the south side, Tim Benz and Chris Adamski with you. The NFL draft is, just checking here, still ongoing. And so is the lull between picks for the Steelers as we approach the seventh round. They'll have two there. But Buzz and I both came to the conclusion, now is as good a time as any to wrap up the Steelers draft. We can make some minor adjustments in print as needed as it relates to what the Steelers do in the seventh round. Maybe they'll get a quarterback. That might be something of interest. Yeah. Maybe a wide receiver. That might be something of interest. Or a back for some depth behind Jaylen Warren. Something like that. An inside linebacker maybe. Who knows? But right now we're talking about seventh rounders, and there is this long gap between Nick Herbig, the linebacker who was added to the fold in the fourth round, Nate Herbig's brother out of Wisconsin, and then basically a couple hours of silence for the Steelers for us to get ahead on our writing. I will post my usual what the Steelers didn't get in the draft column, which all of you love so much when I put that up there annually. That'll be my contribution. But Buzz, let's just talk about what they've done so far, and I think the real meat and potatoes has already been accomplished here through the first 2 days and adding Herbig today. What do you think of the haul to this point?
Yeah, you know, I'm always never one to get too up or too down about it. We're going off of, you know, fourth person opinions essentially on these prospects. But that being said, I don't think anybody can complain in terms of the need. I guess I have seen complaints about an extra tight end, like why a tight end, but I think they really saw the value and sort of what he could potentially become. And Kyle, well, I don't want to get too much into it, but the matchups he could create or not create, or by being an athletic tight end that's there for blocking that will help the running game and help the pass protection, but also it will defenses not have a guy that could cover him and he could maybe make a play for it. So I like that pick. I like that they pretty much went down the line that they didn't, you know, they trade up, got, they go one in the first round, they got a first round talent in the second round, even though early second round you added some more. You need to add youth and depth and a future start on the D-line. You think you did that there, and you know, we'll see how Herbig ends up. I know he's a little small and there's no guarantee that he's gonna be an NFL starter, but I think he's worth, at that point in the draft, he's worth the roll of the dice, how productive he was in college, and he'll certainly be a good special teamer early on. So I really got no complaints of what they've done at all from my point of view. And I'm usually pretty, I don't say pessimistic, but reserved.
Yeah, you're willing to complain,
am
I.
Yeah.
But I tend to agree. You know, like I wrote for the Trib after the Porter selection in the second round, if I had a time machine and I went back a week and I came back to the future and I said, I have been to the future and they've gotten Broderick Jones and Joey Porter Jr. in the first 32 picks and they only had to give up a fourth rounder to do it, what do you think? I think most people would have been doing jumping jacks, especially if I told you how they did it. Like, I think the manner in which they did what they did, A, to trade up to get Broderick Jones, B, to get Joey Porter at 32, when a lot of us had talked ourselves into that being okay if they had gotten him at 17. I think him going at 32, I really meant what I wrote today. I think Porter going at 32 is going to make his career so much easier here than if he had been the number one pick and had been taken in front of Broderick Jones, or had been taken instead of Christian Gonzalez, or if they had traded back to get him in the mid-20s. I just think that the whole nepotism angle gets tamped down substantially now that he is a second rounder, not a first rounder. The whole league had a chance to take him. He was perceived by so many to be one of the top five guys still on the board by the time the second round rolled around. It just seems to be a so much less forced fit beyond, hey, he's Peasy's kid.
And I really thought that was an excellent point by you, Tim. I hadn't thought of it in those terms at all, but it made perfect sense the way you wrote that and laid that out there, and the way you just said it right now. I think you're absolutely right. I think you saw the way Mike Tomlin answered the question about, I don't know if it was directly about, I think it was directly about Joey Porter Jr., but about the nepotism angle, the no people angle, that type of thing. And he really seemed to shut it down. And that wasn't over, was that an overcorrection to sort of as a smokescreen, or was that he's kind of annoyed by that? But at very least, either way, he is aware of that, right?
Porter, you're talking about.
That to know, so that could be, that would have been talked up a lot. But you're right. I think if you, on a more global level here, at 17, I think Steelers fans thought there were four or five guys there. A lot of people thought that the Steelers could get, and what's the worst case if those four or five guys aren't there? And amongst those four or five guys were two of the guys that they end up getting anyway. And I know they trade up at 17, but they made a later trading down in the third round and really didn't give up too much. When you look at it, they hardly gave up anything to trade up in the first round. So to get the two guys that they could have wanted and maybe weren't going to get at 17, and yes, for it to work out that way for Joey Porter Jr., I think really is – you know, and offensive tackle, cornerback, the two biggest needs. It's really about as an ideal scenario as you could possibly construct, really.
I keep reading that Broderick Jones is raw. If he didn't allow a sack and 445 pass-blocking opportunities in the SEC, is that really raw?
Yeah, I don't know.
I'd love to see him, but he's polished then.
I get, yeah. And is he
so raw that he can't displace Dan Moore as a day-one starter?
Usually that's seen as a positive. The Steelers see that as a positive a lot of times, taking the younger player. He's only 3 years out of high school. He was a highly recruited guy. He played 15 games, almost the equivalent of NFL season last year in the SEC and college football playoff games and everything else. He had to beat out guys and play behind guys at certain points. And as he talked about, a lot of people have touched on, block guys in practice that are high caliber, high top of the draft type of guy. So, I don't know where what the raw is coming from. I guess I've seen something. He's just that. But I mean, he's really that much more athletic. I mean, again, they played against Alabama. They played against Tennessee. They played against all these good teams too. So I feel like this is almost like they would search for something wrong at this point, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm real happy with the pick. That was the guy I targeted as the guy I wanted to see them get, being realistic, of course, and even potentially trading up. I thought all the trade talk, we locked in so much on the whole number 9 thing with Chicago. I don't think we really thought about them trading between like 10 and 15-ish. So it came to fruition, the whole Jets angle, the Jets-Patriots angle is lots of fun. And then those two teams traded with each other so the Patriots could move up 8 spots to get a kicker. That was hilarious. But I kind of want to go back for a second to what you said about the Darnell Washington angle, and I tend to agree with the masses maybe that were sniping at you a little bit about the Washington pick. Not that I don't like him as a player. I mean, I think he's incredibly intriguing, but as freakish as he is athletically at 270 to do some of the things that he's doing, he wasn't wildly productive at Georgia. Granted, they have multiple other options, and it does feel to me like a bit of a luxury pick if they deem him to be significantly a second tight end to Freiermuth. Now, maybe they're looking to do more two tights and have them play together a ton. That's a possibility. But, with retaining Gentry and using the pick on Connor Hayward before, and Freiermuth still 2 years on his contract left, I mean, it is a luxury when they had some other needs, especially when they traded down in the third round when Trenton Simpson from Clemson was available. And that was the guy that I was targeting in the third round. I'm like, well, here's the young inside linebacker that could be next year's replacement for Landon Roberts, because he's easy to move on from if they choose to do so in his second year of his free agent contract.
Yeah, there's a lot of peeling back you can do with the Darnell Washington pick, and I see exactly what you're saying, and it totally makes sense that you could have made the case other than, well, and then they're going to draft a quarterback. They do need a quarterback on the roster that you had with the three tight ends they had. That's a pretty good NFL tight end core going into the draft of Freiermuth, Gentry, and Connor Hayward. Now, where there's a lot of ways you can look at it, though, and I tend, again, being Mr. Sunshine and Rainbows today, I don't know what it is, that I see it was, by all indications, not just from Mike Tomlin on Monday, nationally, talking about how deep this tight end draft was. We saw it even with that deep tight end draft, the NFL's official site had Washington as a first-round pick. So they found value here, right? Yes, he's not going to be a better, certainly receiving tight end, more productive. I don't think anybody dreams at this point he's going to be a better, more productive receiving tight end than Pat Freiermuth. But that's the beauty of it, is he's already done that, right? He played with maybe the country's best, with apologies to aside in the non-Travis Kelce, George Kittle department, maybe even George Kittle at this point, the country country's best tight end last year was his teammate. I mean, maybe Brock Bowers might be the best tight end on the planet, college or pro right now, and he played there, and that's why his production wasn't there. So now he both you see how he reacted to that and didn't have an attitude problem or whatever. Seems to he really embraces that role of being the extra offensive lineman, and I think what the Steelers see, and we'll see how it plays out execution wise, whether they can scheme it, whether they could actually take advantage of this. But you could see the mismatch problems if you have essentially a sixth offensive lineman that will help you in so many ways in pass protection and the running game. And then if opposing defenses decide, usually bring in the big package with these extra tight ends.
Number zero is eligible.
That's right, yeah. So you're bringing in bigger bodies in the defense. And if that happens, and if this guy is this kid, we saw some of the highlights, and we'll see. If he's as a sleeper receiving. But even if he does it a few times a game, even if he doesn't, and the opposing defenses have to respect that and maybe bring a safety in rather than a bigger package, then it helps the running game. I think there's a lot of things it could sneakily help the offense.
Last guy we didn't talk about is Keanu Benton, the second Keanu on the roster. Probably more of a nose than an end to start. I see him as more potentially what Javon Hargrave was by the time he left than ever being the next Cam Hayward. I think Brian Brisset was the only guy in this draft that would have been that for the Steelers. But another useful piece, I mean, they've got components up front on defense, if nothing else. They've built some depth there, I think, with Fehaiko and Watts coming on board as well.
Yeah, and you know, they've known for a couple of years now, and this is really probably the biggest year. I don't take any more from the Owl last year. The draft this year and letting go Wormley and letting go in Alu-Alu, the turnover finally from this old defensive line they've had that's been good, but you really had to turn over the personnel there and look to the future. Cam Hayward's not going to play forever, and it'll shake itself out. We'll see. I mean, Loudermilk, it's kind of a make or break year for him, whether he's part of your real, you know, starting rotation going forward here at some point. But you know, we saw with Liao. Now Liao played a little more on the edge and everything. He could complement well having now a guy who's trends more toward the interior, with Liao trending more, you know, away from the ball. So I we'll see how that shape. But the beauty is right now neither one of them have to start really for them, and I'm sure you know, if they show they're worthy of playing time, they'll get more and more, and they'll shake out, and we'll see how it goes in 2024 and going forward.
All right, Buzz, let's go up and watch the seventh round and see if anybody else's brother gets picked. Anybody else from Wisconsin or Georgia?
Yeah. What is that? Now we talk about trends. I mean, storylines that you got: Wisconsin guys, Georgia guys. Now there's five Wisconsin guys on the team. We got defender. We got sons, brothers. Every year, it's something else.
Fehaiko's cousin didn't get drafted. I can't believe they let that fastball down the middle get by. All right, that'll do it for us. Read our stuff to wrap up the draft at Trib Live.